KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego, offering the online Master of Data Science program, a blend of computer science, statistics, and domain expertise. Learn more about University of California San Diego's online Master of Data Science program at omds.ucsd.edu.
It's time for Midday Edition on KPBS. Today we're talking about the arts and culture events happening in San Diego. I'm Jade Hindman. Here's to conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. A 150-year celebration of poet Robert Frost looks at the significance of his legacy to San Diego and California.
Frost is just a wonderful voice to help invite people into the joys of the art form.
And we'll tell you about a 10-day celebration of Latino cinema, arts, and culture, plus the exhibits you won't want to miss in your weekend preview. That's ahead on Midday Edition.
KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego, offering the online Master of Data Science program, a journey through computation, data analysis, and real-world applications. Learn more about the online Master of Data Science program from UC San Diego at omds.ucsd.edu.
Welcome in, San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. Today's Arts and Culture Show takes us to a 150-year celebration of poet Robert Frost, San Diego's Latino Film Festival, and live performances in the weekend arts calendar. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. This month marks 150 years since the birth of iconic American poet Robert Frost. To celebrate his legacy, the Robert Frost Society and the Library Foundation San Diego are putting together the Robert Frost Sesquicentennial. Here to talk more about the event is Robert Bernard Haas. He's the executive director of the Robert Frost Society. Robert, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. We're also joined by Tracy K. Smith. She's a former U.S. Poet Laureate and a Pulitzer Prize winner. Tracy, welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
Glad to have you both here. Robert, I'll start with you. The Robert Frost Society is actually based out of San Diego, and that might be surprising considering he's most known for his New England ties. What's the Frost connection to California?
Well, even though we associate Robert Frost with New England's landscapes and people, we tend to forget that Robert Frost is a native Californian. He was born in San Francisco in 1874. He lived in California until he was 10 years old. And he wrote several poems about his native state. He visited his native state frequently. I don't believe he ever got as far south as San Diego, but he was certainly close. Several of his family members resided in California as they were recovering from tuberculosis infections, so he visited them while they were convalescing. And so he has deep ties to California and always remembered his native state. So the sesquicentennial in many ways represents a homecoming of sorts. One of the reasons that we decided to house the Frost Society in San Diego is because we wanted a permanent home for the society. Past practice had generally been to house the society at the host university where the executive director was residing. And that was okay, but it didn't provide us with consistency necessarily in the hosting of events or the publication of the Robert Frost Review. So we really wanted to kind of stabilize the society and give it a more permanent home. And that was made possible by our friend Jim Hurley and a number of wonderful people who provided the seed money, Malin and Roberta Burnham, for example, Mel Katz, Art Flaming, and the Flaming Family Foundation, and Jennifer and Jim Hurley really spearheaded the effort to establish the San Diego Central Library as our permanent home.
Wow. So it really means a lot to be celebrating this milestone in San Diego. Tracy, you're one of the keynote speakers for this event. What is your personal relationship to Robert Frost and his work?
Well, it's funny hearing the narrative of Frost as a Californian who found a home on the East Coast. I realized that I, like him, have felt so compelled, inspired, and welcomed by the landscape of New England, woods and trees and such visible history. But honestly, my relationship with Frost began as a student, probably most vigorously when I was a graduate student, reading his poems and learning about the ways that the drama inherent in a single small moment between people can create a world, and thinking about the facets of relationships, of grief, of hope, of all of the things that are unspeakable or unspoken between people, as occupying space and heft and making images within his lines. That was a hugely instructive body of work to be invited into. So I think of myself in some ways as writing with an ear that has been trained by what I think of as, you know, iambic pentameter feels like a heartbeat. But when I think of Frost, I feel like footsteps, like I'm walking through a landscape and reflecting upon these moments of human interaction and drama. I also love the ways that large unanswerable questions that have to do with, you know, human imagination and the natural landscape or even the universe dwell so beautifully and naturally feeling in his work. And I think he's encouraged me to throw the radius of my poems, if you will, the imaginative radius out far, and to move into wonder and uncertainty with a kind of joy and hope.
Wow, something that really draws you in. I mean, what do you think makes Frost so accessible as a poet? Why does he resonate with so many people, even today?
Well, one thing I feel that's so true of his lines is that they fit so naturally in the mouth. And when you're reading a poem, perhaps you're reading it silently, but there's something about the rhythm of natural and familiar speech that makes these words feel like you're capable of forming or answering back to them yourself. And I feel like that's a facet of great craft, to make something feel inevitable and natural and also fit quite often in very strict metrical patterns. But that's part of it. There's also a humility in his poems that is also somehow undergirding this tremendous ambition. And that's really alluring and enticing as well, I think.
And Robert, let's talk about the sesquicentennial. What do you want to highlight?
Actually, I'd like to highlight all of it. One of the things that we're taking pride in is the fact that it's kind of a cafeteria style event where anyone who is interested can come and choose to do whatever they want, participate in whatever programs we're offering. So we have roundtable sessions on poetry, on a variety of subjects, including American nature poetry, the new lyric poem, the relationship between Robert Frost and his good friend Edward Thomas, for example. We have a number of creative writing workshops taught by wonderful poets that we've assembled for this event. And we have some scholarly lectures that celebrate the life and inimitable contribution of Robert Frost to American literature. So we wanted the scope of the sesquicentennial to appeal to a wide variety of people. We have a great diversity of poets assembled. We have a number of aesthetic styles and forms represented. And to be honest with you, we thought by doing that, everybody would be able to connect to something familiar, but also find ways to break out of their usual comfort zones by exploring different kinds of aesthetics or ideas. We made a very concerted effort to make all of our events free and open to the general public. So you don't have to pay a large conference fee. All you have to do is register on our Eventbrite registration platform from the robertfrostsociety.org, and anyone can access these events. So it's a wonderful celebration of poetry itself.
And, all the poets you've invited, including Tracy, have some connection to Frost's work. Is there something about Frost that really binds the poetry community together?
Well, Tracy alluded to this, and one of the great beauties of Robert Frost is his accessibility. And this is a virtue that Tracy's poetry has as well. The language of the poems is deceptively simple, but sometimes that deceptively simple language masks great complexity of feeling, thought, emotion, and philosophical idea. So the beauty of Robert Frost is that you can enter his poems on so many different levels. And so many poets have done that, as well as scholars. So interested amateurs take just as much joy from reading Robert Frost as do seasoned scholars who know his work intimately. And so that's one great thing. The other great quality of Frost's poems is something that Tracy also alluded to, is that Robert Frost's poetry sounds like no one else. He developed an aesthetic idea that he called the sound of sense, and Tracy spoke to this as well, where you would combine the tones of vernacular speech and set those tones within the rigid structures of the iambic pentameter line. So there's a kind of fugue-like melody created in the sound of his poetry. It's a beautiful sonic rendition of the possibilities of language. And of course, there are other connections as well. The connection to nature, the astute exploration of the psychological relationships between men and women, between employers and their workers, and so forth. So he's very broad, and he can appeal to a very wide range of readers.
Wow, it's like a language often not recognized, but it communicates to so many people so effectively when you put it the way you do. Tracy, do you have a favorite Frost poem or one that you really feel resonates with you in this current moment?
Yes, I do. I mean, I have a lot of poems of Frost that I love and fragments of poems that I carry with me. But I feel like I find myself thinking about Mending Wall lately. I mean, there's never a human moment when that poem isn't useful because it questions the human insistence upon borders, walls erected between neighbors, and mischievously wonders if it might be possible to ask the right question in the right way to open up the possibility of borderlessness. And I feel like this is a wish and an impulse that feels so useful now in a world with multiple ongoing conflicts and the wish among so many for healing and for community. So that feels like a perennial poem.
What can we continue to learn from Robert Frost today? Tracy, I'll start with you.
Well, to think about that accessibility of language, I really believe that we all hold deep, useful, and complex knowledge and experience that doesn't often enough find its way into words. But Frost's poetry assures me that we all have the words within us to touch those feelings and name and claim them for ourselves. And so I think he's a wonderful poet for people who imagine that there is some sort of high threshold or intimidation factor that poetry brings with it. I don't think that the wisdom is hiding in those poems. I think that it's this abundant thread that assures me that our everyday lives, our everyday vocabularies, and our everyday wisdoms are vital and useful to ourselves and others. I think poetry is an art form that insists upon being talked about. It's a site of feeling and listening, but also dialogue. Poems make me wonder certain things, or they make me remember certain things, or a good poem makes me wish or want for certain things. And to be able to talk about all of those feelings with others opens a portal into a really deep connection that can bring up even among strangers, even among people who don't believe themselves to be poetry lovers and certainly not poetry experts. And so Frost is just a wonderful voice to help invite people into the joys of the art form.
Robert, I'll let you have the last word here.
Well, I think just piggybacking on what Tracy said, Robert Frost has such a capacious mind and understands people so well that he allows us to understand that poetry itself is the greatest vehicle for cultivating empathy that we have. In our own time, I think, you know, we find ourselves in the condition of Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, where people are looking at us or looking through us or looking around us and not necessarily knowing who we are, seeing how we feel, or understanding our value. And poetry provides all of us with that vehicle for increased understanding of each other. And I know this is something that Tracy has written beautifully about in her most recent memoir, that the humanities and Frost specifically, because he's accessible, allows us into an interiority that we all need to explore so we facilitate greater understanding of one another.
I've been speaking with Robert Bernard Haas, the executive director for the Robert Frost Society, and Tracy K. Smith, former U.S. Poet Laureate and Pulitzer Prize winner. She's also the author of the memoir To Free the Captives, A Plea for the American Soul. The Robert Frost Sesquicentennial will kick off on March 20th and run until March 24th. You can catch it at UCSD Park and Market in downtown, as well as the San Diego Central Library. Robert and Tracy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Coming up, meet Maria Paula Loria, the new artistic director of San Diego Latino Film Festival.
Well, I studied history and documentary film. I wanted to make movies, but 10 years ago I started working on film festivals. Like, life put me in the curator path.
She'll preview the 31st Annual Film Festival with KPBS cinema junkie Beth Accomando when we return. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition.
Hi, I'm Bill Hoehn.
And I'm Ted Hoehn.
Over the past 50 years, our family has brought many world-class dealerships to Carlsbad, including Mercedes-Benz, Porsche, Audi, Honda, Acura, Jaguar, and Land Rover.
That's right. This year we're celebrating 50 years in Carlsbad.
So on behalf of the entire Hoehn family, we want to thank San Diego. Throughout the years, we've taken tremendous pride in meeting and even exceeding our customers' automotive needs.
We value the relationships with our clients and look forward to serving you for years to come. We invite you to visit one of the Hoehn Carlsbad dealerships or hoehnmotors.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. Tonight, the 31st Annual San Diego Latino Film Festival kicks off a 10-day celebration of Latino cinema, arts, and culture. The festival will present more than 100 features and shorts from Latin America and the United States. As usual, the festival offers discussions with filmmakers, free student screenings, a closing night party, and the delicious Sabor Latino Food, Beer, and Wine Festival. But what's new this year is the festival's artistic director. KPBS cinema junkie Beth Accomando spoke with Maria Paula Loria about how she came to this job and what to expect from this year's festival.
So give us a little background on who you are and how you came to this job.
Well, I studied history and documentary film. I wanted to make movies, but 10 years ago I started working on film festivals. I work at the Havana Film Festival in New York, and after that I went back to Colombia and worked for 10 years at the Cinematheque of Bogota. It's the second largest cinematheque in Latin America, and I work there as a lead curator. And I also have worked as an advisor of many film festivals in Latin America, like João Pessoa Film Festival. I have been jury of the Berlinale Film Festival, of the Teddy Award, Mar del Plata Film Festival, and I became more as a curator. Rather than a director, as I wanted to be. Like, life put me in the curator path.
And what is it about film festivals that attracts you and that you feel makes them important?
Well, I think it's really important to circulate films. Most of the independent films of Latin America, there's not a wide audience all over the world for them. So what I like, it's to create programs about films that I like or independent film. I like about curation is that it is a creative job. It's not just like administration job, but also it's to make dialogues between or create dialogues between films, which I think it's really important and also challenging.
And coming here to San Diego, we are a border town. What did you see as the particular challenges for programming at this festival? And did you see it as having like a particular personality?
Yeah, I think it's really unique to have like a Frontera film festival. Not all film festivals all over the world have this. Like, you can walk and in 20 minutes you're in Latin America, and then you walk and in 20 minutes you're in the United States. And I think it creates a lot of dialogues. There are crews of films that have citizens in both countries. So this makes you reflect a lot on how borders have no sense and how we are all humans, and we have to, as programmers or creators or directors too, question all of that political frontiers. And I think that's what San Diego Latino Film Festival should do, like visibilize all the frontera narratives and also visibilize Latin American cinema that doesn't have a lot of circulation in the United States. Even if we have most, like here in the U.S., there's like 20% of the population is Hispanic or Latin America, films should circulate more.
And in programming this year's films, did anything emerge in terms of themes or what you're seeing directors do? Is there some sort of trend in any way?
Woman. Like, we have 50% of directors that are women, and really, like, a lot of films that talk about our stories, our points of view, not only in Latin American cinema, but also in Frontera filmmakers section. The directors from San Diego and Tijuana are women, and they are telling different stories in a very creative way. There's a tradition in Latin America, documentary and experimental cinema, is that women had a lot of liberty, and I can see that now. So I think there are a lot of interesting films that work like from the point of view of women. Also, we have more indigenous filmmakers. Also, we have more African descendant filmmakers. And I think like it's not just the white male perspective. So there's more diversity in the selection. And also, we have a focus this year in Argentinian cinema, because last year, the best films in different festivals in Cannes, in Berlin, from Latin America were from Argentina. For example, we have a film in the selection that it's called Trenquelauken. It has won in different film festivals, but also it was selected by the film magazine Careers de Cinema as the best film of the year. And this is the first time a Latin American film gets this number one like choice in this magazine. So we have a lot of entertaining films, but also challenging films for the audience of San Diego.
And this film is actually a two-part film, the one you mentioned. And it's an amazing film because you think you know where it's going, and then it completely kind of goes another direction.
Yeah, it's a film that I really recommend you. It has just one screening at the festival because it has two parts. But what it's interesting about this film is not just the gender perspective, but also that youth travel to mystery, drama, comedy, and you want to stay in the film all the time. I really invite you to watch this film that is really unique in Latin American cinema.
And we are are currently sitting here at Digital Gym Cinema, and it seems like the cinema this year is going to play a much larger role in the festival, which is going to allow you guys to have more than one venue.
Yes, we have three daily screenings at the Digital Gym and also at AMC Mission Valley. But here at the Digital Gym, we will have also directors coming to present the films. We have also a conversation with Adriana Barraza. She is a really important actress in Mexico because she was Oscar nominated for the film Babel. So she's coming to present her new short film here, and she's going to do a conversation here at the Digital Gym. Yeah, so we're trying to get audiences for both venues.
And for people who have never come to the San Diego Latino Film Festival, which I would also say shame on them if they haven't, but it's not just film. There's art, there's music, there's food.
Yes, what I like about this festival also is like it's really interdisciplinary. So you can go to the AMC Mission Valley, watch a film, talk with the director, and then go to Sabor Latino. That it's, for example, an event that brings the best chef from Baja California. They will be here on Saturday, 23 of March in the afternoon at the AMC Mission Valley. Every day we have DJs also in the festival. We have a closing party with the band La Verdad. So it's a celebration not just of film, but also of Latin American arts, culture, and gastronomy.
At Mission Valley, is there also going to be the artist booths and stuff this year?
Yes, we have the artisan market also on the weekends, and we will have also musician bands during all the week at the hub of also in Mission Valley.
And for people looking through the schedule, one thing that you do is it's broken up with kind of sidebars and showcases of films. So what kind of things can people expect this year?
Yes, we have a new animation program. Latin American animation has been growing the past year, so we wanted to dedicate a special showcase to animation. We have also a lot of new authors' voices in Latin America. So there's a new section called New Authors, Emerging Voices. And also we are having a new section that it's called Raices, that are films that connect us with our ancestor stories, indigenous filmmakers, we have Ritmo Latino, that it's also a section about music, Latin American music. So we have films like Los Mirlos, that it's a film that tells the story of the origins of cumbia chicha in Peru. So there's a lot of diversity, representation from all the countries of Latin America and the Caribbean in all sections.
And I know this is like asking a parent about their favorite child, but are there any films in particular that you would like to point out to people, maybe ones that might get lost in the shuffle of opening night and closing night?
I will recommend you all, but I particularly like a lot Totem. It was by Lila Aviles. It's a film that was nominated by Mexico to the Oscar. We will have the actress here at the film festival. It's a film about families. We receive a lot of films talking about family relationships. In fact, we have a short film program that it's called My Family Is, about deconstructing the idea of a family. You know, we have now in this generation different kinds of families, and there are a lot of short films that are portraying that. So I recommend Totem, the short film program My Family Is, and also we will have here at the festival Lost in the Night, Perdidos en la Noche, that it's also a Mexican film that I recommend, because also the director will be coming to present it, and it's a really relevant director from Latin America that is called Amat Escalante. This film, Lost in the Night, was in the official selection of Cannes last year, which is a really important achievement for Latin American cinema. He's having a retrospective of his films in LA, and then he's coming to San Diego to present Lost in the Night. So I really recommend you this special screening that will take place on the 19th of March next week.
And in programming this festival, did you find any particular challenges this year, or being the first time, was there anything that was particularly rewarding or difficult?
A lot of challenges. I'm still learning, but my main challenge is get to know Chicano cinema. I feel like it's a really relevant film production of Chicano cinema, and I want to learn more about that. In fact, we have a new program that is called Arte Chicano because we received a lot of films of Chicano photography, Chicano graffiti, but I need to learn more about this culture that I found, of course, amazing. And I'm really glad that there's a huge production about this matter.
And talk a little bit about the breadth of this festival in terms of how many countries and how many films are you showing?
We are showing 130 films from Latin America. We are having 56 features, near to 100 short films. We're having films from República Dominicana, from Cuba, from Argentina, from Brazil, from Colombia, from Mexico, all Central America. But we also have production from the U.S. We have, in fact, a special showcase that is called Hecho en USA from directors that are making films in the United States about Latin America. So there's a lot of diversity. This year we are having a smaller program than other years. We wanted that almost all the films have a Q&A or have the experience of the audience could have the experience of talking with the director. So it's a much smaller program than past years.
And do you think you brought anything of your own personality to this? Was there any focus that you wanted to make sure was made this year that maybe hadn't been in the past, or just something that you wanted to pursue?
Definitely, like the gender, like queer and woman voices are like really relevant in this program. But I also think that it's important to connect with our roots. So I think I also brought like the need to connect with stories that deal with our ancestors or stories about our traumas, about our past, about our heritage, because I think it's really important nowadays in this world that it's so messy to look at the past and just learn about it, and that we also feel like we are together and history is bonding us together.
That was Beth Accomando speaking with Maria Paula Loria, the new artistic director of the San Diego Latino Film Festival. The festival kicks off tonight at AMC Mission Valley and runs through March 24th. Still ahead, hear from photographer Christina McFall.
Now that I'm older and I go out on the boat, it reminds me that I'm just a small part of a greater world, of a much greater mystery.
More from her and the artist featured in this weekend's Arts Calendar with Julia Dixon Evans. KPBS Midday Edition is back after the break.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Toyota. On a journey toward an electrified future with more options in their lineup of electrified vehicles, offering a choice of powertrain that gives Toyota electric vehicles a balance of power and efficiency. To learn more, visit Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. For our weekend arts preview, we have photography about nature and childhood, ballet and contemporary dance, and much more. Joining me with all the details is KPBS arts producer and editor Julia Dixon Evans. Julia, welcome.
Hey, Jade. Thanks for having me.
It's always great to have you here. So, Julia, let's start with photographer Christina McFall and her new art book and exhibition, Sanctuary in the Wild, huh?
Yeah, so this caught my attention because I love it when art things are held in natural spaces. So in this case, it's at the San Diego Botanic Garden in Encinitas. And Christina McFall is a local photographer. She has a new limited edition book of photography coming out and a coinciding one day only exhibit. It's about childhood and the natural world and kind of the way that wild spaces influence our childhood. And the event is, it's on Saturday. It's in the conservatory space at the Botanic Garden. And she'll show the series of life-size photographs from the book, as well as photography from local youth that she has been mentoring. And Christina McFall's photography in the book, they're in black and white, and they're just really striking. And she had started putting together this book when she took her sons to Costa Rica during the pandemic. She photographed them interacting with nature. And when I talked to McFall, I asked her about the origin of the project. She said it goes back a lot further than that.
The book really got started in my childhood. And I grew up in the Santa Monica Mountains of California on a lake called Malibu Lake. And this was where the connection with nature took root for me. I have the fondest memories of swimming in the lake and seeing the tadpoles as they transformed into frogs and the green algae. It was all just so miraculous to me, and I felt at home and I felt at peace. And later on, as I visit, now that I'm older and I go out on the boat, it reminds me that I'm just a small part of a greater world, of a much greater mystery. So that's where it took root.
I want to take a minute to describe one of these photographs to kind of capture the essence of your work. There's one here that is a child that's sort of floating in the water. Can you walk us through what we're seeing here and what this photo meant to you?
Yes, absolutely. That is actually the first image that I made where I saw something. I saw something different in my son. We live a very busy life with full of sports and activities, play dates. And when we arrived there and he went in this pool, which is a natural hot spring, something washed over him that was this complete stillness. And I don't think I've ever seen that in him before. But being in nature, I mean, really, I felt like those were the primordial waters that all of creation began. And he felt one. He looked like he was one. And that's so easy for children. They are in this liminal realm before the age of eight, and they are connected. They know that it's, you know, biophilia, it's where we came from. They understand that. It's not until we get older that we begin to forget. So that image is very dear to me. That's when I began making photos with more of an intention to capture those moments where they were lost. You know, whether it was looking at the leaf cutter ants, or my son Lucas having this waterfall rush over his shoulders. And he probably sat there for 20 minutes. And it was so touching. And I saw myself in them. I saw myself in my childhood. And I mean, it makes me very emotional to know that they have that they will always have that.
This type of black and white natural landscape photography has an incredible history, an incredible legacy. What do you think it is about the natural world that is so compelling in photography?
That's a great question. And it's the great mystery. And that's what I love about it, is when I pick up my camera and I go outside, the whole world slows down. I become fully present, and I never know what's going to happen that day. And so it's the best office in the world. I love black and white photography because it really isolates your subject. And I love the whole scale of gray tones, the rich darks, the white, that it speaks to me in such a timeless way.
What is your hope for what people will walk away with from this project, whether the exhibition or the book?
My hope is that people remember, where we came from. Life began on this earth 3.6 billion years ago, and we are made of those same elements as the earth. And so truly, we are wild, and that is within us. We just have to remember. We have to put our phones down and get off the screens for a moment, and even just go out in your backyard or put your phone down when you're in line and listen to the birds or get enveloped in a flower. When I walk outside, I like to look with brand new eyes. And when you slow down and you look deeper, there's so much to be revealed in our world and the beauty of nature. So I hope to bring a little bit of peace and coming back to the body's deeper intelligence, really coming home to who we are.
That was photographer Christina McFall discussing her new book, Sanctuary in the Wild, and the One Night Only Art exhibit at San Diego Botanic Garden in Encinitas at 5 p.m. on Saturday. You're listening to Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman, here with KPBS Arts producer and editor Julia Dixon Evans, and we are talking about what's going on in arts and culture this weekend. San Diego City Ballet has a big production that starts this weekend at Balboa Theater. What do you know about that? An American in Paris.
Yeah, so this performance has a couple of new works of choreography, and I'll start with the namesake, An American in Paris. It's choreographed by City Ballet's own Jeffrey Gonzalez, and it's set to George Gershwin's music of the same name, American in Paris. It's about the American fashion designer Claire McArdle, who, this was around the 1930s, she set off for Paris alone to make a name for herself. And City Ballet is also doing a work by co-founder Elizabeth Wistrich, and that's set to the music of Bolero by Ravel. And I have to say that I just saw the San Diego Symphony play this piece, and even though it is such a familiar piece of music, there's something really mesmerizing about the way that the piece builds. I was on the edge of my seat, which was not what I was expecting at a classical music performance. And the performances this weekend are 8 p.m. Saturday and 2 p.m. Sunday at Balboa Theater downtown. But then City Ballet is also doing a third show on the 27th at California Center for the Arts in Escondido. And you can also get discounted tickets if you use the San Diego Theater Month discount code for either of these performances. It's SDTM24.
All right, let's stick with dance for one more. A performance from contemporary dance troupe, San Diego Dance Theater. What do you know about this one?
Yeah, so this is contemporary dance, and these shows will be at the Lightbox Theater in Liberty Station. The performance is called Pieces of Us, and it's this collection of dances by choreographers here that explore the things that connect us and the things that divide us also. I'm particularly looking forward to a couple of the pieces here. One is an adaptation of Kim Epifano's piece from Trolley Dances. This was last fall. The piece is called Who You Are and Where You Are, and it was originally performed in a tunnel beneath the train tracks, so it'll be interesting to see that adapted for indoors. And another is a piece by Gene Isaacs, who is the San Diego Dance Theater founder. This is called Partita for Six Dancers, and it uses the music of composer Caroline Shaw, her piece called Partita for Eight Voices. Mm-hmm. And the song made Caroline Shaw the youngest ever winner of the Pulitzer Prize in composition. It's this a cappella piece, and it's strange, and it's lovely, and it'll be great to see that one choreographed, particularly by someone like Jean Isaacs, who is this local dance icon. So these shows, they're 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and then 2 p.m. on Sunday.
Now to some theater. Tartuffe recently opened at North Coast Repertory Theater in Solana Beach. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I just saw this play, and it was really fun, and I wasn't expecting that. This is by the 17th century French playwright Molière, and it was translated into English verse about 60 years ago. So yeah, I was not particularly expecting it to make me laugh so hard, but the physical acting and the wit in the dialogue, it just made the whole thing so light and engrossing, and it felt like it could be really modern. It's about this man called Tartuffe who somehow weasels his way into this aristocratic family. He completely fools the patriarch into thinking that he is this incredibly pious, holy man. And the acting and the directing overall were just particularly great, as were the costumes, especially Tartuffe's. So this play just got an extended run through April 7th, and it is also part of San Diego Theater Month, so you can use the discount code when you're buying tickets to save a little.
All right, and here's something for the kids, a performance of Charlotte's Web with a chance to meet some actual barnyard animals. What do we know about that?
Right, so this is in Poway. It's from Poway On Stage Productions, and it's just one show, Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock at Poway Center for the Performing Arts. It's everything you already love about the story of Charlotte's Web, plus some bluegrass music. And then if you get there early at 1 o'clock, the 4-H Club of Poway will be there with some animals for a little four-legged meet and greet to bring the story to life. But I hope they don't bring a spider.
Well, it all sounds so fun for the kiddos. Before we go, let's do a few quick live music recommendations. What shows are on your radar this weekend?
So tonight, there's a jazz R&B alternative show at The Loft at UCSD. Performing are Lion Milk and then Chin Chin, which is a band from Inland Empire. This is Chin Chin's single, In Perfect Time, which came out last year. Times are hard right now. Hold on. Be strong. On Saturday, Shane Hall will be at the Casbah with a couple other local acts, Lead Pony and the band Cope. Shane Hall is a really versatile musician. Like, I could listen to a song that is more soul and bluesy and then listen to a different one that kind of made me think of Bon Iver. But this song is from his latest album, Howl and Sway, which really brings out his funkier side. And this track is called Keep Your Love.
Hey, you can find details on these and more arts events and concerts and sign up for Julia's weekly arts newsletter at kpbs.org/arts. I've been speaking with KPBS arts producer and editor Julia Dixon Evans. Julia, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Jade.
That's our show for today. If you missed it, you can always download the Midday Edition podcast wherever you listen. Don't forget to watch Evening Edition tonight at 5 for in-depth coverage on San Diego issues. The Roundtable is here tomorrow at noon. Before we go, I'd like to thank our Midday Edition team, producers Juliana Domingo, Andrew Bracken, Brooke Ruth, and Ashley Rush. Arts segment contributors Julia Dixon Evans and Beth Accomando. Technical producers Rebecca Chacone, Ben Redlosk, and Brandon Trufa. The Midday Edition theme music you hear is from San Diego's own The Surefire Soul Ensemble. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. I'll see you back here Monday. Until then, make it a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Toyota. On a journey toward an electrified future with more options in their lineup of electrified vehicles, offering a choice of powertrain that gives Toyota electric vehicles a balance of power and efficiency. To learn more, visit Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.